listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right to this interview with...
Yes.
Fru. Which one was right, first or second?
Second one.
All right, Fru. You know, I wasn't sure. You never know. You never know.
True.
First of all, I love the throwback pictures you have on your wall. And I know you love old school art. Tell me how you got way into that, because it all starts there, because you're definitely like an old soul and I love it.
Aw, well, I appreciate that. I've always really been into old vintage stuff. Always loved jazz. I started swing dancing in 20, what year is it right now? It was 10 years ago, whatever that year was. And before that, I was always into vintage clothing and just history and everything. So as I've gotten older and just grown more into myself, I've become more and more interested in history and I love jazz. I love blues and just anything.
We're going to get along great. Those are my favorite art forms. Jazz, blues. It's like where it all is, you know, it's where so much culture is.
Mm-hmm.
Especially yeah. That old timey, like I'm a huge fan of like bebop and like the 40s jazz, the gypsy jazz. There's such an era of like depth and soul and renaissance and, you know, it was all about like partying and like looking cool. And, you know, it's not like that anymore. So I miss kind of that era of music and culture and art. There was something about it. So I just love that you're way into it because, you know, a lot of people forget that, you know, that music really is probably America's greatest export. You know, jazz is definitely, you know, the fundamentals of rock and roll and, you know, soul music and all of that. So I love that. Did your family play like old timey records or like, how did you first start gravitating towards it? Even not, I think.
I was exposed to swing dancing when I was the first time when I was 16. And I was like, I think my parents had somehow brought me to a bar. I don't know why that happened or how, but I was like a good kid too. I wasn't really trying to drink or anything, but somebody danced with me and I learned my very first step rock step that night at this little bar in my hometown. And I always wanted to learn after that and then didn't really get a chance until, I don't know, quite a few years later when I just decided I was going to start learning. And I went to a local blues dance after graduating college and hitchhiking across Canada and studying book arts in Maine and living out there. I was like, it's too cold. I have to go back to the West Coast. So that's when I picked up swing dancing. So
did you grow up here? Did you grow up in LA?
No, I grew up in Arizona.
Oh, awesome. What city in Arizona?
A really small town outside of Sedona.
Oh, I love Sedona. That you grew up in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, really.
I'm so lucky, yeah.
So I'm sure you're like, the Grand Canyon, you know, it's right there. Yeah, if you like that sort of thing.
I actually didn't go to the Grand Canyon until I was 19.
What? That's crazy.
It's really far from where I grew up, and I had just moved away, and I came back to visit. And I was like, Dad, I'd never visited the Grand Canyon before. And his jaw drops, and then we went the next day.
You know, somebody told me that Walt Disney used to love Sedona, and that's how he named Thunder Mountain. There's an actual mountain range that looks exactly like Thunder Mountain, and he loved Sedona so much that that's why he named a ride Thunder Mountain. Isn't that crazy?
That is so cool.
I love stuff like that, too, like old school, like artists that were influenced by just random things that, you know, that left this legacy that we're still celebrating. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It was like a movie like Swingers or Swing Kids. So you went to a club and you were hands-on right away.
Pretty much. Yeah. I started learning and just traveling for different swing events and just started building a community that way. And honestly, I would never have lived in LA or ended up in LA had it not been for that swing dance community that I had, because
awesome.
LA just felt like big and scary. And I was like, I don't want to, traffic, can't do it. But because I had this huge community of dancers and already knew where to go out and already had this connection to fun stuff, it made it really easy for me to just flop right down in LA and make it work. So
did you ever go to the Derby when it was around?
No, remember? I wasn't.
That was like the heyday of swing dance. And it was like so crazy because everybody would dress up. They'd go to, and you'd see like Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and Cherry Poppin' Daddies would be there and all these big swing bands. And yeah, it was like this. It was like you were walking into a costume party. When you go to swing events, do people like dress up like that? Is it like that organized and that much of like a kind of like a, you know, counterculture?
I would say so, yes. And I honestly, the past couple of years with the pandemic, I haven't really been dancing as much as a lot of people haven't. And I've honestly lost touch a lot with the swing dance community. But before that, yes, absolutely. Events, people always dress up. And if you don't, it's okay too. But it's really definitely a counterculture. And there's different subcultures within the counterculture. It's really interesting. So yeah, just different genres. It's really interesting mix of just like arts and different interests, and some people are really into their one style of dance and some people love all of the dancing. So
well, one thing I'm really impressed with you, you're like a Renaissance artist. You kind of like have a lot of trades and kind of your hands in a lot of things, one of which is, you know, photography and doing camera work. How did you get into that? You and I recently worked on a project with Doug Silton, one of my old classmates, and I just knew there was something about you. I'm like, that girl's an artist. Like, you were behind the camera and you were doing your thing, but you could just tell, I'm like, that girl's definitely an artist. So tell me, like, what made you, like, want to learn the craft or become captivated with photography and camera work?
Yeah, I always was messing around with film cameras. My dad was a photographer like back in the day, like in the 70s. So
awesome.
He had his old cameras just lying around and I would just shoot film until I was, you know, after college I had a job and then I was actually running a camera club for this transitional residence that I was working at. There was like a homeless shelter and sort of a transitional residence, and I had freedom to do whatever I wanted there as far as like creative stuff. And oh.
My bulldog is probably going to walk in any minute, so you're good. That's awesome. Oh, two of them. Yeah, we want
that's awesome. This never happens. They never both come up here.
You got Hollywood cats for sure. They see a camera, they're like, oh, we got to get up there.
Yes. That's so funny.
So did you develop a lot of the roles that you had, or do you have roles that you have not developed that you kind of kept as time capsules?
Like different, you said roles?
Yeah. Like for, you said your dad had old cameras, like you were like old school film cameras, right? Or do you mean digital?
Definitely both, but I messed around with the film cameras. So that really got me into it and got me started. And then when I had, one of my first jobs, and I started a camera club for the residents there at this place I was working. And at first it was like I was collecting those disposable cameras. And so we would go out and take pictures of the disposable cameras, but it was proving to be kind of expensive. So eventually people would donate digital cameras and all kinds of stuff. And we had a whole bunch of resources for people to use. But I got really into shooting like double exposures on these disposable cameras and kind of making an art form out of it. And then from there started actually working with film and more, you know, serious cameras besides these throwaway cameras. And then when I moved to LA, I just had this kind of random mishmash of photographs I'd taken, and a mutual friend was impressed. A mutual friend with someone who I was like trading for when I first moved there. And basically that was my foot in the door to the film industry, was these art photographs I'd taken that someone is impressed by. And yeah, I started booking gigs with this person, like as a kind of an intern, and then working with their production company later. And it led to more and more work, and it just kept branching off from there. So I chalk it all up to my art photographs that
You all of a sudden froze. So I don't know. I was freezing. So you froze from my end. So you have to start all over again for a second.
Okay.
So you were talking about your film cameras, and then you said disposable cameras, and then I lost you. So go from there if you can.
Oh, sure. So yeah, basically I was working with people who were living in a transitional housing residence and wanted to kind of give them something to do creatively. So I started this camera club, and it started with disposable cameras, and I was creating these disposables, and it moved to shooting on film. But when I moved to LA, long story short, I had these art photos that I had taken just for fun, really. And I was doing a work trade for someone, a makeup artist in Los Angeles, when I first moved there. And she had one of her best friends really liked my photographs and basically had me start interning at his production company just because he could see that I had like an eye with cameras. And that really got my foot in the door. I started doing drone piloting and just learning everything about all these fancy cameras I'd never seen before for movies, you know, the Red camera and all this. So
that's like the $100,000 camera that everybody dreams of using, right?
Yeah. So I had my hands on it the first few, you know, month that I lived in LA, just getting to learn about it. It was amazing. And, you know, I just had all these opportunities that really just branched off from there, just word of mouth and reference. And I really built a career on, you know, film work and photography and video and in front of camera, doing modeling and acting too, and dancing. So it was just, there was so many opportunities, and it was amazing. I moved to LA not knowing what I was going to do, but it worked out.
Well, you know what? That's what makes the city so great. It's like, there's so many artists around in this environment that you can kind of get influenced by so many. And I love that you're just indulging in all of it. You said something before we get to the modeling and the acting, you said something cool about the drone work. So, you know, I used a drone on a music video. Maybe, man, how long ago was that? That must have been 8 years ago when it wasn't really hip. And now everybody uses drones, but you were probably in that world right at the beginning when people weren't really that familiar with it. Tell me how you were kind of influencing, you know, obscure craft. And I know a lot of people don't know much about it, so I'm curious as well.
Yeah, I had a really amazing opportunity when I first started learning with these amazing, expensive drones. I don't have a drone even to that level. I own the DJI Mavic Pro 2. Like, it's just kind of the one that sort of everybody has.
Right.
But yeah, so I was the camera operator on some of these first shoots I was doing. And then I had my the pilot. So there would be two people. One person was operating the drone, and then I'm operating the camera. And it was such a communication back and forth between the pilot for me to like trying to get this shot. And I was just learning too. It was so much pressure right at first, but yeah, it was just, you know, I had to really be communicating with the pilot. Yeah.
The only shot. So you have to get it. So
exactly.
Did you have any chance to do retakes, or was it like, okay, we're going to fly over this area. We just want you to capture, you know, whatever's happening in this moment. How did you kind of adjust or adapt?
Sometimes there was an opportunity to do retakes, but I mean, it's just the pressure's on. So I think it was a really amazing opportunity to learn how to just be calm in the moment when there's somebody looking over your shoulder or somebody yelling at you, because that's often how it is on set.
Right.
So yeah, I had a lot of creative control in the beginning, and luckily I could work on my own projects too, and kind of some just fun projects with the production team. And there was always opportunity to practice and learn. So it was pretty amazing. But yeah, now I kind of fly my own drone, and I'm working on editing a whole backlog of footage I have on that from traveling.
That's awesome. You know, it's one of those things where I never get tired of any of that footage, whether it's over a beach and you're seeing like surf shots, or like, you know, there's always like a great, I always look for a drone footage on YouTube of the fireworks in LA, because there's all these different fireworks that go on 4th of July. So it's kind of cool that you were able to find this, like, you know, almost like avant-garde path in this other, you know, part of the industry. And, you know, you know you're an artist when your best work is done under pressure, because all artists are like that. They're like, oh, I have to capture this one thing. I don't have that much experience, but you know what? I'm going to roll the dice and I'm going to bet on myself, and that's everything. So I love that. So now you've been, you've probably been modeling for a while. You kind of understand both sides of the camera. Tell me how that adjustment was, being in front of the camera and, you know, wanting to, you know, act and model and so on.
Well, honestly, it kind of all happened all at once, and I moved to Los Angeles with a little bit of a modeling portfolio that I had built with artists that were just like using photos for reference for drawing, but they were, you know, good enough photos that I put them in a portfolio and people started hiring me as a model. And it was interesting because whenever I would go to a photo shoot as a model, if I ever talked about camera stuff or, you know, express that I knew how to do camera assisting work, people would be really interested in that. And I actually got a lot of film industry jobs and behind camera work because people saw on my modeling portfolio that I was also a camera person. And so a lot of people wanted to either give me a chance and, you know, see what I was made of, or just have like another female on set. Maybe it was, you know, maybe it was that. But I think also people were just seeing how I, you know, how I was on set and as a model, seeing my professional behavior, they could see that I would also be a professional camera person. So I got a lot of gigs doing camera work because people worked with me as a model first.
Well, and you know what, you can also tell a difference. Like, I noticed it also when we were working together. I'm like, this girl is, you can just tell she's either, I thought you were a singer. I was like, she's probably a singer and a camerawoman and a model and an actress. And you can just tell that you're easy to work with. And that's so much of it too. Do you find, especially coming from Arizona, I'm sure people are pretty laid back. Do you find that transition from Arizona to LA kind of sometimes can be jarring between who you're working with? And, you know what I'm talking about, because I'm from LA, so I'm used to it. But a lot of people that come to LA, that's one of the first things they notice. Like, man, people are like a little bit high strung, a little bit on edge, aren't always nice. Very kind of like there's a hierarchy with all of these jobs sometimes. So tell me what that adjustment was like, because this is all the good stuff. This is all the stuff people want to know.
Yeah, it was definitely an adjustment. My first big movie that I was on, I was like the bottom, talking about the hierarchy, I was the bottom of the hierarchy in the camera department. So I was the camera utility or the camera production assistant. And I cried every single day when I came home from that job.
Really?
People were really mean to me. Yeah. I was like, it was like a hazing situation. I feel like because if, the people above me were kind of like, you know, abused by their peers in school or whatever and hazed or put down, then they felt the need to then do that to other people. It was pretty intense. Like not even just, you know, the producers were kind of scary and a little intense, but then the people I was working with directly in the camera department were mean. There were some nice ones, but I will say that I followed up with those people who I was pretty intimidated with on set based on some advice that the director of photography who had kind of brought me on that job gave me. And he said, you know, bring everybody out one by one individually for a coffee or a drink or whatever, and just pick their brains about how they got into it and, you know, what you could have done better and blah, blah, blah. And so I did that. And ironically enough, one of the meanest people on that set to me, I ended up taking him out and doing that, picking his brain. And because I did that, he then referred me when somebody else that he knew was looking for a female production assistant, because they were trying to fill kind of like an even balance on a particular set. And so I ended up working on that project for a year and a half and getting to meet amazing people. It's actually a documentary that is on Netflix called This Changes Everything. So it's produced by Gina Davis was in it, and I'm sure I got to meet her. She's one of my favorite stars growing up, and a bunch of other people, like, I won't name drop, but it was just
That's all the good stuff. That's all the fun stuff. In Hollywood.
Just like from coming, and it was because I was mortified and so like put down by this person that I wanted to kind of come back and say like, okay, what could I have done better? And he saw that and he was like, I didn't think you were actually serious. Here's another recommendation. And I got
it. Also, it shows that, you know, sometimes what people do in LA, and it's like, I've seen this so much. It's like, they want to see what you're made of. And yeah. It's like, it's kind of, you know, unnecessary in a lot of ways, because what I find, like, the best artists that I've ever come across have been so humble and kind that none of that ever matters. And so you start to realize that the people that really aren't that great or exceptional tend to be like really kind of like assholes, you know? So yeah. I had this amazing experience meeting Paul McCartney, and I was just starting out. I was making a record. He was making a record, and he was so kind. And it just blew my mind. And I knew at that point, I'm like, nobody deserves to be an asshole if Paul McCartney is cool as they come, you know? So, right. You know, it's amazing that you actually went back to that person and said, you were not very kind, but I'm going to try and see if there's a positive about it. This, most people would not have done that. So pretty commendable. And tell me what that experience was like working on that documentary, and tell me how that kind of shaped some of your artistic goals or how you reached some of them.
Oh, wow. So it was a small crew. I was the production assistant, but I pretty much did a little bit of everything. I also did camera work. I helped with makeup on the set because it was such a small crew. We just had the producer, our director, director of photography, and then a gaffer. And our crew was almost always female based. We did have a male DP at the time, but it was because the documentary is about gender inequality in Hollywood. So they were really trying to give it a diverse, you know, crew. So there was a lot of different production assistants in and out, but it was really just an honor to get to work right alongside Tom Donahue is the director. He also directed the documentary Casting By, which is about casting directors and like that whole kind of saga within the film industry. But just a really wonderful, humble, creative man. I just soaked up the way he interviewed the people that they had on the movie. Just such a kind person, and just to be a part of this project. And it was ongoing, and it was back and forth between the two coasts. So I would get called randomly, like, hey, can you do these dates? And I'd be working on it for a week at a time, and then nothing for months. And, you know, I just never knew when it was going to end. And then finally it was over, and I had no more days on the set. But I've seen the movie. I got to go to the premiere, and every time I see it pop up on Netflix, I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. I worked in that movie.
Awesome. And you know, it's like, that's the whole journey. It's like, that's what most people just, you know, aspire. You came from a small town in Arizona and then came to Hollywood, and here you are working on a documentary and meeting all these crazy celebrities. You said you met Gina Davis, who was one of your heroes. Yeah. Tell me what that experience was like.
Oh my gosh. So I hadn't even seen Thelma and Louise until a couple of years ago. It was after I had worked on the film. But I grew up watching Beetlejuice, and she was a main character in that. And I just,
favorite movies.
Oh my gosh. It was just such an honor to meet her. And so I remember putting her lav mic on and kind of threading it through her shirt. And I'm like kind of kneeled down by her chair to put the device on the floor or whatever out of the way or something. And I just remember like being on the floor and like looking up at Gina Davis in the chair and just saying, I love your work. Beetlejuice was one of my favorite movie growing up. And she just kind of laughed, because it's like, out of all the films she's done, she's like, Beetlejuice, like, it was just funny, you know. But
right. But it's a classic. I love Tim Burton too. Like, so that movie, I mean, that is one of the best movies she's ever done. So I'm sure she hears it a lot, but that's a very good one that you picked. So yeah. And you know, now that you're making this transition also into acting and, you know, doing auditions, tell me what that process is a little bit like, because I know like it is super, it's very Hollywood. That's as Hollywood gets. I've been consistent. Every actor that I know, even the ones that are like getting big projects, 6 months down the road after the project is done, they're still like, oh my God, I'm still hunting for work. Like it was day one of trying this process. So tell me a little bit about that process for you.
Well, I never really wanted to go through that. So I decided that I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do the kind of regular acting trajectory and going to auditions and stuff. I've done a few projects, but to be honest, they're projects that have just fallen in my lap. And I've acted in a couple movies. I've had a couple music videos. I was in a Sia music video, and I just never wanted to be part of this competition to kind of get to the top. It just never felt right to me. I love acting. I grew up from age 9 until age, I think I stopped doing it like kind of full time at maybe like age 20. Mm-hmm. So, it was full time in there. But then after that, I was like, okay, I'll do projects as they come. And these days, like, I would love to just be in a community play. I love acting, and it's just something I want to do to express myself. But I didn't really take it too seriously in LA because I'm a very empathetic person. And when I act, I embody, I guess I've always been a method actor. I kind of just did method acting from day one. I don't know. I just was like, you just become the thing that you're trying to be. So it's really hard for me to kind of separate that once I'm a character, to separate those emotions from my real life. And I found that it was taking me some recovery time. So I took a break from acting. And when I moved to LA, I just thought, well, I'll do it if something comes my way. And that's pretty much how I left it.
Awesome though. You know, they don't really like look for it or seek it out. And it just, you start getting more and more work because people see the things that you've done. They're like, who is that? She'd be perfect for this role in blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. So, and I love that you, method act, there's like, you know, two main schools, the Uta Hagen, you know, mm-hmm. and method. And I love that method actors are fun to be, they're the most convincing on so many levels because they are the thing, you know, they are the character to all the degrees, even when the camera's off. And that's what I respect. It's like, when you're really in it like that, it's hard to shake the character. Do you feel like whatever characters you've done after you're finished, they still kind of live in you on some levels? Like, do you ever flip into any kind of subconscious, you know, way of thinking of a character or anything like that?
I mean, I definitely used to, but I think it's just been kind of a little while since I've done a serious acting project. But yeah, I mean, these days I'm just really trying to like become more of myself and really get to know myself. So I haven't done any projects, but yes, I think that this really have stuck with me, and especially in high school, because I was just such a free spirit and super artsy, and so I was playing some funny characters, and or maybe I imbued them with my goofiness, and then kind of became goofier because of it. But
that's awesome. And now you've been making music. You play the ukulele. I saw that you play the trumpet. Those are two completely different instruments amongst others. Tell me how you fell in love with music, and it is the best. I just love it. It's like, I can never shake it. I also did a lot of theater and musicals and stuff, you know, growing up, but I just can't leave music. I feel like anytime I leave music, I'm like on an island that I'm like, I don't want to be here. I want to be back in music where it just feels good all the time, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Music's the vibe. I, from a young age, when I was a little girl, I just always felt that I needed to play music. And I started, I learned how to read music and learned the basics of piano when I was like in fourth grade, I think, but then didn't really stick with it. And then in high school, I just had this feeling all through school that I needed to play music. And if I didn't learn now, that, you know, it would be harder when I was older. I knew that. So my junior year in high school, I'd fiddled around with the guitar and taught myself some chords. But my junior year in high school, I decided to join the marching band because I had some friends in marching band.
I was in the marching band too.
That's awesome. I went to the marching band director and I said, what instrument do you need? I want to be in marching band. And he said, well, we need a trumpet. So I took a trumpet home and taught myself to play that summer. I was horrible in marching band for 2 years.
Not an instrument to play and march.
it was bad. It was laughably bad how horrible I was. And I was the trumpet, like I was a section leader because I think I was probably the oldest or whatever.
Wow.
So after high school, after 2 years of horrible playing, I decided I wanted to take it seriously and I wanted to become a professional trumpet player. So I went to school for music theory and was taking lessons, and I was all into it. And I burnt myself out. And so I decided that I wanted to play an instrument that I could sing to. So I learned to play the mandolin, which is a very hard instrument. I don't think I can actually play it anymore. I took lessons for a while, but it's been so long that I don't think I could play it. So I picked up the ukulele, and that's easier than the mandolin. And now
it's still a hard instrument, though.
It is. That's true. So I'm feeling like I'm pretty good with it. I practiced a lot. I'm not as core.
Bass is the best.
There, yeah.
You know, like I love you know, guitar so much. Mm-hmm. Piano and guitar, like, those are the instruments I play in a band. But like, bass is like one of the most important instruments. I think it's actually the most important instrument in a band because it's like what directs all the chords. Mm-hmm. It is the only instrument that is groove and pulse at the same time. And it kind of controls everything. So like, I love to play it, but I always feel like I'm just butchering it whenever I play. But I love playing it because I just think it's such an amazing instrument. And I always listen to bass. When I listen to a record, I always listen to the bass. And I'm most impressed by bass sound. So if you get extra vibey points just for, you know, you being a girl, being a woman playing bass, that's just awesome.
That's where it's at, yeah.
A woman playing bass and a woman playing drums, I think, are the coolest and just most awesome instruments I've seen. Powerful, they have an energy when they play it, so I hope you never stop. And yeah, that's amazing. You recently did a photo shoot, like a old 40s calendar. That it's awesome. Tell me what that experience was like. Did you have your own costumes, your own dresses? Did you kind of have a vision of what you wanted it to be? Because it's amazing.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do more pinup style photography for a while, or modeling, I guess. And I went to Viva Las Vegas, which is a big event. Yes, you know, okay. Right. For the first time last year. And they had all these cars, and I was really excited about the event. So I went shopping for some vintage clothing from a local person who sells it, and just kind of shopped through all her racks and got stocked up. And so I had all those dresses and all this fun stuff to wear, and there were all these cars, and I had somebody who was willing to take photos. So we hadn't even planned to make a calendar, but I ended up getting published through Retro Lovely, and then they have this option, you can make calendars. So I did a pinup calendar for the first time, and
awesome.
This year, or I guess 2023, I'll be making my own. I think I'll just publish my own calendar. It's a little bit easier, but it was fun, and I just love the style, and it's so popular, and it's just something I'd never really dabbled in very much. I've done a lot of types of modeling, but hadn't really done a lot of pinup stuff, even though I'm really into the swing scene. So it was kind of funny that I'd never done it.
I love that you chose, like, you had vision to use cars as a backdrop, and like, you know, there's like this, you know, beautiful conflict between, like, you know, woman and machine, and like these two things that are both, you know, beautiful and powerful, and you use it as a backdrop in such a way that was so tasteful. And you can also tell, like, you're a fan of all those old 40s and 50s pinup calendars because they were like super classy, and there was like a character with you know, in every shot. How did you choose your shots? I mean, you must have been overwhelmed with the shots that you probably had, and then you have to narrow it down to 12. And how did you kind of come up with that?
Well, I had some help. So every great creator needs some collaborators. I am a firm believer in that. So I gave the final like approval, but I had somebody kind of design it, and we kind of picked favorite photos, you know, or I picked favorite photos and then we narrowed them down. So I was lucky to have help on that one.
Well, you always need outside eyes or somebody to bounce something off of.
Absolutely.
Who are some of, you know, you are definitely a Renaissance artist. Who are some of your biggest influences as far as like artists that you kind of pull from or inspired by, whether it's photography, whether it's acting, whether it's modeling or dancing? Who are some of the artists that inspire you the most?
That's a good question. I feel like, honestly, I think that I'm inspired by a lot of the names that never really made it to our point in history, because I always think about all of the people who have just been creating for themselves or creating in their small communities and who've made like super powerful impacts, but maybe that the whole world doesn't know about. And I just really want to honor those people, because I think that, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I'm one of those people, you know. I mean, a lot of people know me, but most people don't. I'm not, you know, a celebrity. So I really feel like those people that made the most impact on me are the ones that are invisible, like in a way. And so it's, for me, I can't really go back and see exactly who they are. I mean, even in my own ancestry, there's a lot of mystery in my background that I don't even know about. Like from my father's side, he was adopted, so I have no idea who my grandmother was. And I always think maybe she was this amazing artist. My maternal grandmother was an amazing artist. So I definitely drew some inspiration from her paintings, but I'm not a painter. So
maybe you got to start.
I've dabbled in painting. Actually, I done a little bit of everything, but yeah. So I feel like there are some amazing photographers that I look up to, like huge names like Annie Leibovitz, and
she's the best.
Names are just kind of slipping through, those sort of unnamed individuals who've gotten buried in history that just had such a powerful impact. Everybody has an impact on the world, and it's like the butterfly effect. And I always love to think about those people who made an impact that maybe the world didn't get to see. So
you just totally made my day with that comment.
No.
Every artist like thinks about the impact that they make, and you know, you always want to cast the biggest net possible. But I remember, you know, when I was in music school, and I asked a friend of mine, I was like, so what do you want to get out of being a musician? And I remember her saying, I just want to impact one person. You know, if I can impact one person with music, I feel like that is everything. And I was like, I'm going to steal that answer, because that is everything. And it's like, you don't think about those people. Once you've impacted them, you move on, or you're trying to think of, you know, bigger dreams, or you casting a bigger net, you know, trying to get to the next level. Yeah. And you said something that is so powerful, and it's easy to underestimate how valid that is. Because if I think of the artist, you know, there's a street artist, you know, that I once saw maybe 20 years ago. And Ned Landon, I think is his name. And he's just an incredible songwriter, singer. And he's just a traveling minstrel. Like I even, you know, had like a residency at a club, and I asked him to open. And he's like, you know, I don't do shows like that. I just play for people on the streets. And that's where I want to thrive, and that's where I want to impact people. And it just blew my mind, because I was like, what a true artist. You know, it's like one of those people that just impacts people like, you know, one of those haystacks that rolls by. And I never got to look for him on YouTube. And it's like, no one will probably ever know who he is. And I never will forget him, because he's so good, and he's so inspiring, and he's the farthest thing from a pop artist. And I just find that it's remarkable that you just said that, because I think it's easy to sink as far as what you're creating, who you're creating with. Even if you create something great, getting to that next level for the next project, which brings me to my next question. So you've been doing all these art forms. It's going to be a two-part question. Do you have a favorite, and also, what is the next art form you can see yourself doing, or the next project you can see yourself doing?
All right. Do I have a favorite? I mean, I always come back to music, and yeah, just like I've dabbled in painting and pottery and book arts and filmmaking and, you know, all kinds of just everything. So I always come back to music though, like every time. So I don't know, there's just something so self-soothing about it. And for whatever reason, all the other art forms have like kind of come and gone. I still dance, I still do photography, but those are the mainstays for sure. And
I love that. Great answer, by the way. I'm a little partial, but yes. I agree.
It's just so important for me. I love being able to share music, but it's also just like such a self-soothing.
It's my therapist. That's what I tell people. Mm-hmm. And it's like I was up till like 2:30 in the morning last night just playing guitar for nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody can hear me. I'm like plugged into my headphones. And it gives me so much joy. And nobody's even hearing what I'm doing, but it just feels good. And it's like you're aligning with whatever natural forces there are. And so I love that answer because, yes, I'm very partial. All right, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, can I say, I always come back to music. So the second part of the question was, what's next?
Yeah, what do you see, what either a new art form or do you see kind of going forward with music or what do you see what's next for you?
Well, I think there's two branches that I'm going to go off of that subject. And one is I'm really excited about creating my own album of original instrumental songs. So just something that I can have to play in the background of my live streams. Basically that's kind of where it originated. I've always wanted to do this, but this is like, there's actually like, there's a need for it now because it's copyright free. I can just play it whenever I want and not have to worry about it. So that's my current goal. I don't know anything about recording music or writing songs.
I'm your guy. I know so much about recorded music. So yes, we have to collaborate. That's how that works out.
That'd be amazing. Cause I'm really excited about just creating beautiful albums of music just to have, not necessarily to sell or to market, but just to have and say I created. And I think that the other branch of that question goes in a similar direction, but with visual art. And I have some already, but I have so much photographic art that I have produced and created and produced, and it's just sitting in a hard drive. Like nobody gets to see it. So my goal is to create books of all my art just to have on hand, to give away, you know, just to have in existence. So, oh no, I think you froze now. There we go.
No worries. So you said to make art, to give away, and then we lost you.
Just to have and to share, just to have just something visual so that in the future, when I am history, that people can maybe find my art. Like they're not going to find it if it's in a hard drive. If I have books of it everywhere, I just want prints and books of my art just everywhere.
Yeah. You know what's amazing about that? It's like, you know, when I think about, you know, when I think about music or just art in general, it's like nobody ever thinks of what they're leaving behind. Because really, as an artist, you go through life and you're kind of like watching everybody kind of like link up and start families, this and that. But like really the artist, the whole journey is to leave something behind. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't leave something behind in life. And I love that you're just thinking about it on that level because that is totally the essence of being an artist. It's like you're given this gift of life, this journey, this, you know, voyage, and it's about how you interpret it. And it's like, that's why I knew, like, we didn't even talk much because there was so much going on that, the project that Doug was putting together. And, but I just, you know, I've always known artists, like I feel artists. And I was like, I know that girl's an artist and I'm going to find out what she does because this whole medium that I started was for artists. And it's like, I did so many other talk shows before where, you know, you'd be interviewed by people that didn't really love art or care like artists do. And my most fascinating conversations are with artists. It's just, I find that they have a perspective on life or they find that life is so precious that creating something to leave behind with what you were just saying is everything. So how much art do you have just stored on hard drives is my first question.
A lot, a lot.
black and white, color, everything.
Both black and white and color. I tend to shoot a lot of black and white film, I think.
My favorite.
But yeah, it's like cheaper to develop, so I've just sort of collected it. It's not that I consciously did that. It was just like, it's cheaper to buy and cheaper to develop, and I just happen to have a lot of it. But I love doing, I mean, color photographs and black and white. There's all of it. So I do instant film and do like, if I had started, I was, oh, I think you're frozen again. There we go. Oh, I think you're muted. Oh. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. You said instant film, and then I lost you.
Well, it's just another kind of art form that I use. I guess I'm shooting on 35 millimeter. I use digital too, but there's just something about, oh, that's what I was talking about. When, the first book that I actually created, was self-portraits on instant film. And so when the quarantine first started, I actually was alone for 2 months, and I did, it was one of the happiest times of my life, to be honest. I don't know how that worked out, but I was on the self-portrait project, and I just, every single day I would create a new self-portrait on instant film. And it was just kind of a finicky camera process, and the film was finicky. So it took a lot of time and energy, but I ended up just falling in love with, I think I ended up taking 49 self-portraits, and yeah, so that's one of the books I've created, but want to do that again.
I love that you just have vision and like chapters of being an artist. Like I find, you know, like I'm envious of like people who paint and photography. Like there's actually photography that I take, you know, in my music room. It's my pure hobby. I'm like, I never want to make money at doing it because I just feel it's like an insult to people that actually have the gift. But I find it to be such a fascinating art form because pictures are everything. It's just like you live and you find stories in them in a way that's just, you know, outside of music, it is my favorite art form. So I just love that you're thinking about all these different ways to share your art. And I hope you continue to, you need an Instagram page where you just have pictures of your work everywhere. That's got to be your first start, because I would love to see that. And you do make point of this show is, we have artists that, you know, are young, new, like vibrant artists, and then you have seasoned old timers coming in, and this is a community thing. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't have footage of is this progression of the artist. And I want to just always have every artist that comes through. We usually have everybody come back around 9 or 10 months and just do like updates on what they're doing, because like, I mean, who's doing that? Like, unless you're following that artist all the time, you're not going to know those updates. And I'm fascinated by artists. I just find that it makes me grow as, you know, my passion for art. And it also just, I find more fascination with the arts in general, just knowing how art impacted people's lives. This will be my last question. Was there a moment that you really felt this, I call it the moment of Zen. What was the moment of Zen that you knew you were an artist?
I mean, that's a really tough question, because I kind of never really saw the possibility of becoming like a freelance person until I moved to LA. However, when I was a very, very little girl, I remember feeling the like need and obligation to paint and to do creative things. I remember it was like, I was like, I have to paint because it's what I'm here to do. Like, it was kind of that feeling.
Yeah.
Like 7 years old and being like, oh, okay, I think, you know, and it was always about that. And then it became the music. I just felt like I had to learn how to play music, and I procrastinated for quite a few years till I was, you know, a junior in high school, but it's never too late to play music, I always say.
Nope, never too late. And you know what? The one thing I always tell people too is music never leaves you. You leave music. So never leave music. Mm-hmm. And where can people find you if they want to hire you for jobs or find your camera work or follow your future art books that you're going to have? Where can people find you on Instagram or social media?
I'm found in a lot of places. My Instagram is Hello Jewels, spelled like JEWELS, like the jewels. HelloJewels.ig. So yeah, Hello Jewels here. And so that's Instagram. But I also have my photography website is Jewels, spelled JEWELS, Jewels Film and Photo. And then I'm also streaming on Twitch. I'm starting this on Twitch. So that's twitch.tv/HelloJewels, also like the gem. So
love it. Well, we want you back. Thank you so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. And, you know what? We wish you nothing but the best. And I hope we collaborate. We're going to have to collaborate on music at least.
I'd love that.
Yes. You know what? It's like, I got to tell you, it's like, you know, I run into a lot of artists, and you just know when people are truly passionate about art, and you just have that vibe, and never lose that, because it's really what it's all about. And it's easy to get, you know, to lose focus on commercialism or things, or just get distractions from life. But I hope you always stay focused, because the world needs your art. And I love that you're just so versed in so many art forms. So never stop the journey. Okay.
Thank you, Nikhil. Thanks for having me. And this has been awesome.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of Jules, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of each other. Take care and be safe, Jules. We'll see you next time. Okay.
See you later.
Have a good night.
Good night.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.